All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. We're diving into a real classic area today that I think can really tie even the sharpest law students in knots, you know?
Yeah.
And we're talking about remedies, you know, when a contract goes bad, but specifically contract law remedies.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got this fascinating Pennsylvania Supreme Court case, should be on your radar if it isn't already, AMPM Franchise Association v. Atlantic Richfield. It's a mouthful. But, you know, to make it real, to make it really hit home for you all, imagine, you're a gas station owner.
Okay.
Okay, you're locked into this franchise agreement. You're forced to sell just one brand of gasoline, can't sell anything else.
Uh-huh.
And then that very gasoline turns out to be causing problems for your customers' cars.
Oh, no.
I mean, what kind of recourse do you even have in that situation, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a nightmare scenario for a business owner.
It's big time.
And that's exactly the kind of high-stakes scenario that this case dives headfirst into.
That's right. I mean, for you, the listener, picture this. AMPM franchisees. They're obligated, they're bound by their franchise agreements to exclusively sell RRCO gasoline.
Right. Only RRLA.
Only Argo. That's it. And then, between 1982 and 1985, RCO supplied them with this experimental gasoline blend. It contained oxinol.
Oh.
And the allegation was that this gasoline, this oxinol blend, it was defective, leading to, well, engine problems, car troubles. You can imagine news like that spreads like wildfire. And these franchisees, they saw a huge significant drop in their gasoline sales. I mean, understandably so.
Yeah. I mean, who wants to buy gas that they think is going to mess up their car?
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's also important to think about the full impact here, right? It wasn't just the gas sales themselves that were taking a hit. So many of these AMPMs, they have these mini marts attached. And if fewer people are coming in for gas because they're worried about it, well, then naturally, fewer people are going to go inside and buy, you know, the snacks and the drinks. So these business owners, these franchisees, they're really getting hit on multiple fronts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then there's the whole question of reputation, right?
Yeah.
How do you even begin to quantify the damage to the reputation in their local communities? People start to associate that gas station, their gas station, with unreliable fuel, even though they had absolutely no control over the gasoline itself, right? They're locked into this contract.
Totally. Yeah. So you're seeing declining gas sales, you're seeing reduced mini mart profits, you know, and then you have that really, really critical, though less tangible, damage to their goodwill. And that's kind of the inherent value of their business based on customer loyalty, you know, positive reputation. That's goodwill. So they sued RRCO, arguing breach of warranty.
Okay. Okay. So let's unpack that a little bit, that key concept. For you, the listener, breach of warranty. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC, I mean, we all know the UCC.
The UCC, of course.
This basically means that a product doesn't live up to the standards or the promises that were made about it when it was sold, right?
Right, exactly.
In this specific case, the franchisees were arguing that this IRCO gasoline, it wasn't what's called of merchantable quality.
Mm.
Now, what does that really mean for you in practical terms?
Yeah.
Everything about goods like gasoline, you know, a product that's supposed to do something very specific. Merchantable quality basically means it's fit for its normal, its ordinary purpose.
Right.
In this situation, the purpose of gasoline is to fuel vehicles, right?
Yeah.
And it's supposed to do it properly without causing damage. So that's the argument they're making, that this gasoline didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for damages, right? They're seeking compensation for these financial losses. And this is where it really gets interesting from a legal perspective, because the question at the heart of AMPM v. ARCO is, what kinds of economic losses, what kinds of damages can they actually recover? Are things like lost profits, harm to goodwill, is all of that just considered too speculative for a court to even try to calculate? And that's really the mission of our deep dive today, you know, to understand how the Pennsylvania Supreme Court tackled this really complex issue.
And it's important, I think, you know, for you to grasp this. It's really at the heart of contract law, right? Like, what remedies are available when a deal goes bad, when a product fails to live up to its promises? And what's really interesting is that the lower courts in this case, they actually sided with Aragoso.
Yeah.
Basically saying damages like lost profits, goodwill, too speculative to award.
Which, you know, when you think about it, when you try to put yourself in those franchisees' shoes, I mean, it feels like a really, really tough outcome.
Yeah, totally.
Right. If the courts are basically saying, well, we can't actually say for sure how much profit you would have made had the gasoline not been defective.
Right.
Like, where does that leave you? Where does that leave a business owner who's really and truly been harmed by a product that they were obligated to sell.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a tough spot.
Yeah.
However, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, they looked at it differently. They reversed the lower court's decisions. And their key holding was that lost profits, both the direct losses from the gas sales decreasing, you know, what we call primary lost profits, and the indirect losses, like the mini-mart revenue going down, secondary lost profits, they said that even damages to goodwill, they're not automatically too speculative to be recovered under UCC Section 2714 when a warranty's been breached. So basically what they're saying is just because it might be, you know, tough to put an exact dollar figure on these kinds of losses, that doesn't mean that they're automatically off the table.
Right, right.
Exactly.
So what was the court's thinking here? What was it that convinced them that these damages should at least be considered, you know, as potentially recoverable?
Well, there were a few really significant points that they brought up in their reasoning. First, you know, they emphasized the fact that these franchisees, they were contractually bound to purchase all their gasoline from ARCO. And that meant that they had absolutely no ability to cover. And for you, the listener, cover in the UCC world, it refers to the option that an injured buyer has, you know, to go out and buy substitute goods when a seller breaches.
Right, right. Go find it somewhere else.
Exactly. But here, in this case, they couldn't do that, right, because of this exclusive agreement. The franchisees, they couldn't just go out and buy non-defective gasoline from a different supplier to kind of mitigate their damages, you know? So their only real option when ARCO supplied this faulty product was to pursue legal action. And the court specifically pointed to UCC Section 1106, which stresses that remedies, they should be administered liberally with the goal of putting the injured party, the harmed party, in as good a position as if the contract had been fully performed, right? As if they had gotten that good gasoline.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, when you think about it from their perspective, the franchisee's perspective, they're in a situation entirely created by this agreement with RR.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah.
And the usual advice that you get in a contract situation, a breach of contract situation, where you'd normally say, okay, we'll go find a replacement, that's just not an option for them.
It's not on the table.
It's completely off the table.
Yeah. And then the court goes on to specifically address the secondary profits, right?
Yeah.
The lost sales from the mini marts. The court recognized the very direct connection between the decline in gas customers due to, you know, well, concerns about the fuel, and then that subsequent decrease in people going into the stores. It wasn't just about the faulty gasoline, you know, as a thing in itself. The breach of warranty had this ripple effect, right? It had this clear ripple effect on other parts of their business.
Yeah.
And the court explicitly acknowledged that interconnectedness, which is, I think, pretty huge.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And I think for everyone to really understand the significance of this case, I mean, the big development here, it seems to be on the issue of goodwill damages.
For sure. Yeah.
Because historically, Pennsylvania, like a lot of other places, had been really reluctant to allow businesses to recover for that kind of damage, the damage to their reputation and, you know, the loss of future customer relationships, just because those kinds of losses were considered too speculative, too hard to measure in a really reliable way.
You're exactly right. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, they really confronted this, you know, longstanding kind of hesitation. And in a big move, a really significant move, they essentially overturned prior Pennsylvania case law on this, including a case called R.E. Davis Chemical Corp.
No.
And the majority opinion, what they said was, well, the legal and economic landscape, it's changed, it's evolved. And they pointed out that, you know, modern economic analysis, forecasting techniques, all of that has really made the calculation of goodwill damages less of a, you know, a shot in the dark and more of a reasoned, you know, assessment based on real evidence. And they were essentially saying, look, we've got better tools now. We've got better methodologies to really understand and quantify these kinds of losses. So we shouldn't just automatically dismiss them as being too speculative.
That's a really fundamental shift in how the law is thinking about this, right? I mean, acknowledging that a business's reputation and its future earning potential based on, you know, the loyalty of its customer base, I mean, these are real and valuable assets that can be damaged by something like this.
Right.
By a breach of contract, like supplying a defective product. And therefore, they should be potentially compensable, right? Like, you should be able to recover for that damage.
Exactly. The court was very clear that if these franchisees could, you know, present good enough evidence to really establish a direct causal link between that defective gasoline and the harm to their business's goodwill. And then if they could provide a reasonable and non-speculative basis for calculating the amount of those damages, then they should be allowed to pursue that claim.
So it seems like a really positive outcome for the franchisees.
Right.
At least in terms of how the law is developing and this evolution in Pennsylvania law.
Right.
But there was a dissenting opinion from Justice Flaherty.
Right.
Right. So what was his main disagreement?
So Justice Flaherty, he agreed with the majority's conclusion about the recoverability of the lost primary and secondary profits. He was good with that. But he really disagreed, very strongly disagreed with the decision on goodwill damages. And his concern was primarily a procedural one. He pointed out that the franchisees, they hadn't actually specifically pleaded a claim for damages to goodwill in their initial legal complaint.
Oh, interesting.
And his argument was that it was improper for the court to even address, let alone make a ruling on an issue that wasn't formally, you know, before them in the pleadings.
Nice.
So he was emphasizing that important legal principle of judicial restraint, basically suggesting that the court, you know, maybe they were overstepping a little bit by deciding on a claim that the plaintiffs hadn't really explicitly raised.
So for you, the listener, for you as a law student, that's a really, really important lesson, I think.
Yeah.
A practical lesson. Even if the law in a particular place is becoming more open to allowing recovery for certain types of damages, like goodwill in this case, you absolutely have to make sure that you've clearly and specifically pleaded those damages in your legal complaint.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Otherwise, as Justice Flaherty pointed out, you run the risk. Right. You might miss out on the opportunity to actually recover them, even if you have all the legal precedent on your side.
Exactly. Yeah. Meticulous, comprehensive pleading.
Yeah.
You know, including all potential damages. It's so crucial in any legal action.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's important, too, to understand the legal basis of these claims. Right. The franchisees and AMPM, they brought this lawsuit under breach of warranty, which is contract law.
Right.
It's the UCC, right?
Right.
And that's a distinct legal theory from tort claims. So think negligence, think fraud.
Right, right.
In a breach of warranty claim, you don't necessarily need to prove that the seller, in this case IRCO, was negligent in, you know, how they supplied the bad gasoline, or even that they intentionally misrepresented the quality. You don't have to go that far.
Right.
The central focus, the thing you really have to show, is whether the product itself, the gasoline, whether it met the standards, whether it met the promises that were made under the contract.
Right.
Express or implied.
Yeah.
And I think as the court underscored, the key to recovering what are called consequential damages, which, you know, that includes lost profits and could include goodwill under the UCC, the key is foreseeability at the time the contract was made. So in this case, IRC had to have had reason to know that these types of losses, you know, decreased gas sales, mini-mart profits tanking, damage to the franchisee's reputations, they had to have a reason to know that these would likely result if they supplied defective gasoline.
Right.
Especially given that these franchisees, again, they are contractually bound to only sell RCO gasoline.
Exactly.
So the court basically determined that RC, because they were the sole supplier in this situation, they definitely had reason to know that providing this defective product was likely going to lead to real financial harm, right?
Yeah.
For all of these franchisees. And it's interesting, too, because while the franchisees also initially brought claims against RCO for misrepresentation, those were actually dismissed by the court because they didn't make sufficiently specific allegations in their legal pleadings. Mm. And the court also rejected any claim for exemplary or punitive damages, which are intended to punish, you know, really bad behavior.
Yeah.
Because under the UCC, in this kind of case, the main goal is to compensate the injured party, the franchisees in this situation, for their actual losses.
Yeah.
It's not to go after, you know, ARCO. It's not to punish the breaching party.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. It's really about trying to make the injured party whole again.
Right.
So bringing it all together for you, the big takeaway from AMPM, Franchise Asnee v. Atlantic Richfield Co., is that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court really broadened what can be recovered. In the UCC breach of warranty case, they said last profits, both direct and those related secondary losses, and even damage to a business's goodwill, these are not inherently automatically too speculative to be claimed.
Right.
Right. And they might be recovered. And the key thing you need to demonstrate are a clear causal link between the breach, you know, the breach of warranty and the actual damages that you're claiming. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a reasonable and non-speculative method for calculating those damages. And you have to prove that those types of damages, you know, were foreseeable to the seller at the time the contract was entered into.
Exactly right. And the fact that the franchisees were locked into that exclusive contract with ARCO, you know, and they had no way to cover their losses, you know, to go somewhere else, that was a really significant factor in the court's thinking.
Yeah.
It further emphasizes the UCC's principle of, you know, liberally administering those remedies to make the injured party whole.
Right. Right. And I think it's also really significant that the court was willing to recognize the potential for recovering goodwill damages, especially given all the developments in economic valuation techniques.
For sure.
I mean, it's a real evolution in Pennsylvania law that's important to know about.
Definitely.
So for you, the listener, for all of you future legal minds out there, we want to leave you with this thought to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Given the principles that were laid out in the AMPM case,
yeah,
and given the potential for recovering, you know, these kinds of broader economic losses when there's a breach of warranty, how would you advise a client who's drafting a franchise agreement right now, like today?
Right.
What specific clauses, what kind of considerations would you include to really strategically allocate the risk of potential product defects down the line?
Yeah.
And to ensure that your client is protected,
yeah,
you know, in case there are business losses, especially the ones that might go beyond, you know, just the immediate cost of the defective product itself. I mean, it's a case that really, I think, highlights how interconnected everything is.
Yeah, it does.
You've got the contract terms, you've got the potential breaches,
yeah,
and then you've got the remedies that might be available. So much to think about there.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's it for today's deep dive. Hope you found this one as fascinating as we did.
Yeah.
Until next time.